This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
We're now joined on the line by Anthony Reichal, Israel correspondent. Anthony, what a pleasure it is to talk to you. Today, of course, is Yom HaZikaron, the Memorial Day for those killed in Israel's wars and acts of terror. How are you going to mark the day, and how do Israelis in general mark this day?
Well, of course, Boker Tov, this day comes exactly a week after we marked the Memorial Day for those killed in the Holocaust. And I want to start with a really short but meaningful poem that was written by Israeli poet Tzur Ehrlich. And his poem is called Behefresh Shel Shavua, with the space, with the distance of 1 week. And the poem goes as follows: Shnei Yemei Zikaron Smuchim Kol Shana L'Tovat HaChishuv HaKlali. Kama Ole Lanu Im Medina V'Kama Ole Lanu Bli. And if I look at Elon Levy's translation of the poem, which he calls 1 week apart, it goes as follows: Two remembrance days each year we calculate in sum, the price of having our own state and the price of having none. And that really summarizes this week and the two memorial days that we have, one last week and one this week. Today we are memorializing those who've been lost in Israel's wars and those who have been victims of terror. And interestingly, each year, the authorities usually publish the number of names that have been added to the list of victims of war and terror since this time last year. Now, I've noticed that on this occasion, for some reason, no numbers have been published, but we do know that more than 1,000 people were killed just on October the 7th. And since then, soldiers have been killed and civilians in terror attacks and in during this war that we're enduring. And it's a very, very meaningful and mournful day in Israel. It started yesterday at 8 o'clock with a one-minute siren being sounded throughout the country, everybody coming to standstill to think about those who've been lost through the wars and through terror. And today, in just more than 2 hours from now, at 11 o'clock in Israel, another two-minute siren will sound, where the country will once again come to a stop as we memorialize those who have been lost, not only over the last year, but of course over all the years of Israel's existence. And whereas last week I spoke to Howard about some of the similarities that we feel in our current circumstances with the Shoah, with the Holocaust, I think today we can think about some of the differences that we experience now as opposed to what the victims of the Shoah experienced. And of course, the main difference is the existence of the State of Israel. Now, there are some people who argue that the State of Israel, with all the Jews living in Israel as they do, creates some sort of a magnet, some sort of a target, that those who wish to express anti-Semitic feelings and those who wish to be violent and wish to potentially commit genocide against the Jews, as the Nazis tried to do back in the duration of the Second World War, that Israel being here is a great target and a great magnet to allow those people to express themselves, and potentially even raises itself up to even encourage those who have some anti-Semitic feelings to express them. And to be fair, we've seen that with people being so-called anti-Zionist, which we know is largely just being dressed up for anti-Semitism. But I think that, on the contrary, the fact that we have the existence of the State of Israel and a strong state which identifies as a Jewish state and which will fight for the rights of Jews across the world, I think creates some sort of a feeling of comfort and some sort of a sense of security, particularly for Jews in the diaspora who are undergoing a really torrid time. And if people thought that anti-Semitism was put to bed at the end of the Shoah and the never again meant really never again, we've now seen that that's really not the case. So I think that it's worth giving some of those different things some thought, and there's so many things to think about on a day like today. But right now, last night we saw the main state ceremony at 8 o'clock start with a siren and then continue in the presence of the president, in the presence of the chief of general staff. The president is quite firm in the message that he continuously sends at every opportunity that he has to speak publicly. And his message is unity. Let's get rid of those people who are trying to create the divisiveness in our society, because we need to unite in order to fight this. And that is a very, very consistent and constant message that the president sends at every opportunity. The chief of general staff also has his very consistent message. And that is that the IDF in Gaza right now is fighting to release the hostages. First and foremost, that is the priority of the IDF. And so people are talking about whether there might be hostage exchange deals, there might be things happening that would see the release of our hostages. Of course, particularly for those who were hostage in Gaza and have now been released, that many of them have come out saying that they cannot celebrate Israel's independence, which we will celebrate tonight and tomorrow, while there are still friends of theirs held hostage in Gaza. And most of us really feel like that. And that's the reason why these Yom HaTzmaut celebrations will be slightly toned down, because we can't feel free until our hostages are released from Gaza. Today, the events will focus around military cemeteries across Israel. At 11 o'clock, the siren will sound, and that will signal the beginning of a whole host of ceremonies that will take place in military cemeteries in towns and cities across the country. That's the moment for families to get together, for the local people to get together. It's a very kind of personal experience rather than being a state experience, even though there is a kind of a state ceremony that will take place at the Mount Herzl Military Cemetery in Jerusalem. But mostly it's all about focusing on local cemeteries where local heroes have been buried as they've lost their lives in the fight for this country. So it is a moment that we stand and we give our thanks to those who have made the ultimate sacrifice in defending the State of Israel, and recognizing how important the State of Israel is today in Jewish life around the world. And without their sacrifice, we wouldn't be here today. And that's why in the poem it says, this is the price of having our own state. And unfortunately, it's an extremely heavy price that we have to pay. But I think that having the state is absolutely justified, the price that people have had to pay. And those that have sacrificed their lives over the years can feel that they've done so, their families can feel that they've done so for an extremely good cause and an extremely important cause. And I hope that Jews and non-Jews in the diaspora would subscribe to that view.
Anthony, you've put it so beautifully. And while you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that these 3 days, the trio of days, actually are in no way coincidental. Yom HaShoah, teaching us to remember, or reminding us to remember. Yom HaZikaron, which is today, in which we pay tribute to sacrifice. And Yom HaOtzmaot, celebration, which will start tonight, and we're celebrating survival. So it's remembering, sacrificing, and survival. And the thread that links all of that is the hostages in Gaza. You mentioned that in some places, the celebrations tomorrow for Yom HaAtzmaut would be somewhat watered down. And I wanted to ask you if you could just elaborate on that. This is the second year that hostages are in Gaza and that Israel's commemorating Yom HaZikaron and then celebrating Yom HaAtzmaut. How has the Gaza situation and the fact that hostages are still there affected the commemoration and the celebration?
In every possible way, in every possible way. In fact, it was quite noticeable last night at the ceremony that took place at the Kotel at the Western Wall, as I mentioned, in the presence of the President and the Chief of General Staff. It was noticeable that a chair had been set aside with yellow covering the chair as a chair for our hostages. And the TV cameras constantly panned in on this empty chair, which had a message on it about freeing the hostages. Everything that we do, everything that we think about is the fate of the hostages is just threaded throughout our society. Wherever we go, the yellow flags are up, the yellow ribbons are up, the messages, the posters with the pictures of the hostages. There is nowhere that we can go in Israel and possibly forget even for a moment about our hostages in Gaza. And there's little doubt that they are very much part of everything that's going on right now. And they are the reason why, when it comes to the usual festive Yom HaTzmaut, there will be some festivity and there will be some thanksgiving for 77 years of a Jewish state. But I think that we will all feel a slightly heavy burden on us even during Yom HaTzmaut as a result of the fact that we know that 59 Israelis are still being held in Gaza. We believe 24 of them to be alive still. And Lord only knows what suffering they are going through. The stories that we've heard about those hostages, from those hostages who have come home and explained to us what they had to endure while in Gaza, are just unspeakable. And if we think that our hostages are going through that right now, it's just something that's quite inconceivable. The level of depravity and of evil is unparalleled.
Anthony, I've seen posts on social media reminding us that Jews have two memorial days, Yom HaZikaron, to remind us of the cost of having Israel, and Yom HaShoah, to remind us of the cost of not. There is a story, and I wanted to know if it was making traction in Israel, that the Prime Minister's wife, Sarah, yesterday when the Israeli Prime Minister was giving his address that you mentioned, he said that there are up to 24 living hostages, which is what you've just said. And without realizing perhaps that her mic was on, Sarah Netanyahu said fewer. And then he said, I say up to. Is anything being made of that in Israel? Because there is a report that the families of the hostages are, of course, very angry and wanting to know if there's information that the Prime Minister and his wife have about potentially some of the hostages who are thought to be alive, not being alive, and they're not sharing that information with the families.
It's certainly a story that has made traction and has been publicized. And I think it's just making more and more of the fact that there are so many people in Israel who feel that the Prime Minister's wife is a little too involved in some of the matters of state, and that she might know things that maybe the hostage families don't know, and display that in public inadvertently by mouthing the fact that she thought there might be fewer than 24 hostages alive. I would imagine that if they knew for sure that hostages were not alive, they would relay that information to the families, as they have done already up until now. So as soon as we've received information where we can determine without any doubt, and of course the complexity of Jewish law starts to come into reckoning here, because the moment the official pronouncement is made that someone is no longer alive, even if we don't have their body, it has many, many implications in Jewish law. And so they are very cautious about deciding ruling that people have been killed without having very firm evidence of that. But I think that it would be safe to say that even those people who we knew to be alive maybe a month or two ago may no longer be alive, because we know from the reports that we received from those who were freed that some of those hostages were in pretty bad condition. They were weak and they were injured. Their injuries were not taken care of, and they were suffering from all sorts of ailments and illnesses and results of injuries that they'd sustained during the massacre that took place on October the 7th. So it would come as little surprise to me that potentially some hostages have died or been killed since the last firm information that we've received. But of course, it's not for the Prime Minister's wife to make this public. And I think that that's the point that's being made.
It's just so desperately sad talking about the hostages. I sometimes almost feel like it's a parallel universe where we talk about them. I want to go on to a different topic. And we are receiving reports that Israel's population has exceeded 10 million for the first time on the eve of Israel's 77th Independence Day. And looking into this, the numbers are driven by high birth rates and immigration. And the projection is that by the year 2050, there'll be 16 million people living in Israel. Anthony, about one-fifth of those are Arabs. And I understand that the communities where you have those high birth rates are the Arab community and the very religious Jewish community. What economic and social challenges and changes will this present to Israel going forward?
First of all, the fact that we've reached 10 million in 77 years, which is 12 times the number of people who lived in Israel at the time of the founding of the state in 1948, I think is quite an astonishing fact. And also, in addition to that, it's worth noting that today 45% of world Jewry actually live in Israel, which is also for me quite a surprising number. And very, very soon I can predict that more than half of the world's Jews will be located in Israel. And of course, people will have their views about whether this is a good or a bad thing. But I don't see any harm in that whatsoever, particularly because that number is being driven by quite high birth rates in Israel. And that's pleasing. The population rose by 1.4% last year, which compares to the world population growth of less than 1%, around 0.9% during the same time period. So I think that this also indicates where Israel is going. What you're saying is correct, that most of the higher birth rate in Israel is mainly amongst the Arab population and amongst the ultra-Orthodox. It's interesting, having said all of that, the birth rates amongst the Arab community have always been relatively high, and there were lots of theories about where this is going to take us and what disaster we might reach. But actually, the proportion of Arabs in Israel at 20% approximately has stayed relatively stable over the period of 77 years that Israel's been in existence. So I don't see that really getting out of kilter. As to the ultra-Orthodox growth rate, again, I think we need to work on somehow integrating culturally, socially, economically, integrating the ultra-Orthodox community more into Israeli society. Part of that is about the ultra-Orthodox joining the army. That's an entirely separate discussion, which we will have hopefully in the coming days to discuss what's been going on about that, because there have been some movements forward on that particular front. But overall, I think a high birth rate, a growth rate, not only from birth, but indeed from people coming to live in Israel, is a good thing. And I think we need to celebrate 10 million people living in Israel. 77% of them approximately are considered to be Jews, or approximately 20% of them are Arabs. And I think that that is a perfectly fine situation, and we're doing economically pretty well with all the challenges that we have. So I think overall that it's a very positive outlook with many challenges ahead, which need to be faced up to, of course.
Our Israel correspondent, Anthony Reich, will be chatting to you as always tomorrow. But right now, it's just gone 8:01, which means it's time for news, and Lindiwe is standing by.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.